Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Frank McIntosh, author of The Relational Leader, a revolutionary framework to engage your team, part two of two. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Frank McIntosh, author of The Relational Leader, a revolutionary framework to engage your team, part two of two. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Frank McIntosh shares with us his insights on people-centered relational leadership that breaks down organizational barriers and engages and motivates employees for achievement of truly superior results. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. Well, Frank, we've talked about appreciation and celebrating folks' successes. I was wondering what it looks like when the relational leader has to establish accountability in the other, more negative sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, if I go back to the, you know, the business side is one part of this. This is how we get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. I used to tell volunteers working with the kids, you aren't their friend. You can be friendly to them, right?
Right.
But you're not, right? They do not hang out with you. So
okay.
Don't try to be their friend. You can be friendly, but don't try to be their friend. And so I'd say the same thing here. All of these things, when you talk about trust and you talk about fairness and you talk about fun and appreciation and attentiveness, none of that means that I'm going to come in the morning and hug you every day.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It means that I value you as a human being and what you can do. And here's, because I value you that in that way, I want you to understand what it is that we have to do in order to make this business successful. If you're doing this, quite frankly, people, they're going to come to you and say, well, what do I have to, what do you want me to do? What can I do? What can I do more than I am already doing? Because that's what they want to do. So you have setting up accountability. I had accountability, I had very strong accountabilities for all of my staff, you know, throughout my career.
Mm-hmm.
And every relational leader I know, you know, holds people accountable. But holding them accountable and holding them to a fire is two different things. You know?
Okay.
I'm not going to chop your head off. I'm not going to bite you because you didn't achieve your interim objective. I'm going to help you to understand why you didn't, and let's see how we can make it work. What other resource can I bring to you to help you get past that? So accountability then becomes something that you own because you know that you're not going to get burnt by it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to always give more than you can or that maybe you're expected to or the way you maybe used to work when you were in a non-relational situation.
Sure.
But you just give more because you care more and you're invested emotionally in the business as well.
Okay.
So accountability does not become an issue. It's a matter of it does become an issue for a lot of reasons, and not the least of which is that everybody has an internal accountability now, that they have put on themselves for performance. And when you do that, you know that's far greater than any document that you could ever put together and put in front of an individual and say, these are the things you're accountable for this year.
Yeah, certainly when they're invested in the business is theirs. And right. They will work to make the business succeed just as though they were the owners or they were the executive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that you can take these attributes and put them all together, you realize there are not many businesses out there that can claim that.
Right. Right.
There's only, eight of them, right? Seven of them.
Yeah.
And there's seven attributes. And you would think that, and none of them are, mind-boggling, right?
Right.
If you thought about them, you'd say, well, geez, that makes sense.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't we do it?
I don't know. I probably should have been asking you that question. I don't have a good answer. It's just a lot of the companies I work with are not relational.
Well, and, you know what it is? In my opinion, one of the things I think that it has to do with is fear.
Mm. Okay.
Fear. It is, I can't let go. I'm smart. I can do this. I'm not sure Charlie's as smart as I am. If he was, he'd have my job. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much I can let him do anything. I'm going to control this situation. And I don't really want a lot to come back from him. I'm going to play it safe. Right? I'm not going to open myself up to something that's different. I'm going to stay in the comfort zone. We've all, not all of us, but a lot of us are very happy when we're in that comfort zone.
Yeah.
And get out of it is a challenge. We don't know that this is going to succeed. And that, because I got to feed my family and all that. And, gee, how could I take a chance like that? So they don't.
Yeah.
And or they have been trained in a different way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I think that we may see new and different things coming with more women in the in executive positions. And I'm not talking about the first group of women that came through in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Right?
Okay.
But what is this next group of women going to do? They're more confident, more capable, and you see women heading up. What is a woman heading up the DuPont company today?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm wondering what EI is thinking.
Yeah. You were talking about the security and not wanting to try something different. I also wonder a little bit if it's not the hyper-competitive nature that we've mm-hmm. tended to breed. And in that, I don't want to open up. In fact, I don't want to be people-focused. I'm me-focused because it's all mm-hmm. about me and me being successful, not about us as a team being successful, which we really need to have that focus if we're going to be people-focused.
Yeah, and some of the great coaches, all, put themselves in the background.
Yeah. They do.
And the team in the foreground, and they made them, they're the ones that are doing the work, not me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're doing the work.
Yeah.
But they're letting others, share in that glory. And it really is a sense that, we can't do this all alone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's too complex.
Yeah.
So get everybody involved and get the right people. If you put the right people in the job that they should be in, then go let them do it.
Right.
Skip Shainholz, who headed up a small little regional bank here in Delaware, just retired. I said an editorial to the newspaper once, and I called it the little engine that could. And it was like they had about 600, 700 people now. But back then they had maybe 300, 350 people.
Mm-hmm.
He took them from the ashes. Their stock had dropped to one.
Wow.
$1.
Wow.
They brought him in. I don't think there was any expectation that he could save it.
Mm-hmm.
Before this little crisis hit us here in the financial crisis,
yeah.
That stock was $66.
Wow.
And it was his leadership that did that. And he's a very relational leader, very relational. And he is just amazing what he was able to do in that time. But he did it with everybody. He always had his people on the way. He put them up on pedestals for and said, "Hey, you just did a great job for us. Thank you. You know, found ways to say thank you to folks. He understood that, and he built a great bank from it. A very solid bank today, you know, even with all the crisis that went on. So that is it. Really comes down to having your people trust that you will act in their best interest. And if you do, because that has not happened to them in the past, they will respond in extraordinary ways.
Yes. Yes. Now, Frank, for those listeners who want to become more relational leaders themselves, are there any activities, I don't know if it's training, practice, maybe a support system, coaching, mentoring, that you would suggest that they seek out in order to help them grow as a relational leader?
Well, this is going to sound parochial, but at the risk of that, they should buy the book. Right?
Okay. Yes, I agree they should buy the book.
Buy the book and read it, right? Cover to cover. And you know this as you read it, it does help them. It's laid out pretty well as to what are the things that you have to do, where are the potholes that you're going to find, how can you get from point A to point B? It's all laid out there in the book. And now, if that's the case, why isn't everybody doing it? Let's assume people like it. Why aren't they doing it? Well, it takes a great deal of discipline to make all of this happen. And so they would have to be committed to it. They probably need coaching. At least in the early stages. It really depends upon where they're coming from, you know, intellectually and around this whole idea. But frankly, it's common sense stuff, real common sense. It requires a great deal of discipline, and it requires you to stay on top of it all the time. And that's why if you could have a coach, somebody like myself, or you could have somebody else, but somebody who can say, you know, that wasn't very relational, Charlie.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I thought you said you were going to be fair. None of what you just did was fair. And so, you know, you're going to need a partner of some sort to help you to know when you're not doing things the way you should be doing so you can make corrections. And be open enough and be real enough and courageous enough to recognize that you are going to make mistakes. And so what? Mm-hmm. I'll fix them.
Yeah.
I'll admit them. I'll fix them, and I'll move on. And I will try not to do that again. So I think that for an individual who's trying to get this going, there isn't a lot of books about this out there. Most of the books that talk about relational leadership, and I don't really hear that very much either, but the whole concept of being relational, they deal only with that prime element I was talking about,
yes,
which is the fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say character mostly, and they'll stick on character. They might say character and trust. But they don't deal, it's sort of like not dealing with the whole person, you know. So you've got to deal with all these attributes because they all are meaningful to become relational. So you need to read about it. You need to think about yourself, who you are, and what you want to be. How do you want to be different? How do you want to make a mark, and what will that mark be? And to the extent that you can get into your own head, fine. And my organization is very happy to help any organization reach out and work with this concept and make it become real for them.
And so our listeners know, too, we're going to put links from the article that'll be on the Strategy Driven website to your website. So if they do want to get in touch with you for that kind of assistance, they can just click and they'll be right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great.
Now, one last question, and this is for our listeners now that want to go even one step beyond, and they want to transform their organization. So it's gone from a personal to an organizational transformation. They want their organization to be relational. I was wondering, you know, can someone who's not the CEO or a senior executive lead that kind of initiative? Or should it really be led from the top? And then how long does that take? I'm assuming it's not an overnight transformation.
Oh, no.
But I was wondering if you had some perspective that you could provide or context you could provide our audience as to how long it takes to do an organizational transformation like that.
Well, first of all, you know, it would be best if you did have the support of the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just no doubt about that, right? But even with CEO support, that doesn't mean, you know, where most things muddle up in businesses is it with middle management.
Yeah.
Right? CEO says, we're going to do thus and so, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's all excited about it, or she's all excited about it, and the senior management team, they've got their arms all around it. You get down there in the middle management group, like, how do they expect us to do this?
Huh? Yeah.
I don't know. I can't do that. I mean, and so it bogs down. So even with the CEO, right, saying this is the way we're going to go, it's real helpful, but it doesn't mean that that's actually going to make it happen.
Right.
So it's best to have that. If not, then people have got to say, this is the right thing to do. I want the chance to do it and make your presentation and let the CEO know or let senior managers know, officers of the company, say, I'm willing to take a chance to do this. Give me some time to get it done and let's see where it takes us. Because if it works in my group, it can work in Sally's group. If it works in Sally's group, it can work in Peter's group. And then we can start talking about transforming the business.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to take a company like, it's easy for me to say DuPont, right?
Yeah.
We're going to change this overnight. That ain't going to happen. Right.
It's
just too many people. It's too many parts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's going to have to be, in a bigger company, it's going to have to be come together in pieces anyway.
Okay.
In smaller companies, it can be done all together, but in a big or a medium-sized company, it's probably going to have to be pieces anyway. So it's okay for somebody to stand up and say, I believe in this. Give me the chance to do it. If this person is strong and has a good track record, they're probably going to get it because they've got a really good case to present.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep the feedback loop to senior manager or the CEO, and they begin to see what's happening, they'll embrace it. They're not stupid. They didn't get to be CEO because they were stupid.
Right.
So they're going to get into that, and they'll see, gee, this works. Why aren't we doing it? And then things change. So here's that. Now, it depends upon where you start from as to how long it takes.
Okay.
Right? And if you are somewhat relational as an organization, and there are many that are somewhat, then that's a shorter trip, right? But if you are the old-time command and control, right?
Yes.
You have the first huge hurdle you have is trust. And because no one's going to believe that you really mean it. All they think you're doing is setting them up, you know, for something. I don't know what it is. But it's something, and it's not going to be good.
Yes.
So you have got to, first of all, spend a lot of time in front of the mirror making sure that you want to do this. And then secondly, you have got to say, I'm going to take this a little bit at a time, and I'm going to recognize that trust is the biggest factor. In the book, I talk about the 10 building blocks of trust, and I'm going to work through those 10 building blocks, and I am going to demonstrate. I'm going to become authentic around this concept, and people are going to see that what I say and what I do are the same. And if I do that long enough, and I start introducing, in the book I talk about how somebody that is this far out can come in, mm-hmm. and they introduce pieces, other attributes as they move along. And so people begin to see more and more of this new person that is being created, and they begin to trust and accept them. Once there is acceptance of trust, and then it moves fairly quickly. As long as you have the right training and the right designs that you're trying to put forward mm-hmm. for this concept, it'll move fairly quickly. So I would say a company that is traditional command and control, pretty heavy in that area, it could take, depending upon what it takes to move the CEO, it could take as much as 6-8 months, a year even.
Yeah? Okay.
Before you get the trust factor. And then it'll take time from there. But, you know, it's like anything else. If you don't start, you're never going to finish. So,
right.
You know, the sooner you get moving on this, the sooner you'll begin to see results. In the meantime, you know, you haven't changed anything about how you're running your business, per se, right? The business model is still there. The products are still there. Mm-hmm. You're changing behavior, your own behavior, first and foremost, and then the behavior of those that are around you, and then the behavior of those that are around them. So that behavioral change, we know, takes longer. So you're looking at anywhere from 3 months to a year before you can have a sense that, hey, this is really starting to come together.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not a long time. I mean, we've got to get out of the quarterly mentality.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we live in a drive-through society almost. Everyone wants everything just right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it takes time.
Yeah, and you said something about cost, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't cost very much. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
What about trust is expensive?
Right.
yeah. What about character is expensive? Well, maybe you don't have any. but be that as it may, celebration, it's a mistake to have big, giant celebrations. Right?
Yeah.
That's a mistake, in my view. Doesn't mean that you can't do it from time to time, but celebrate the small things.
Yeah.
Make the people that are working in the trenches day in and day out, give them something. Give them that pat on the back. It's amazing what people will do for not much of anything. I had I know we're running short on time here, but I'll tell a story that deals with cost. I had an opportunity to go to a training session out in Phoenix, Arizona, a fellow by the name of Joel Weldon, retired now, but he was a consultant, and he was speaking at this conference that we were at. And interestingly, he had a business card that is the most unique business card I've ever seen. It looked like a can of peas, a little small can of peas.
Okay.
You get off.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Now imagine that can of peas, not a green label, but it's a bright orange label.
Okay.
And on the front of the label, it says, success comes in cans, not cannots.
Okay.
On the side of the can were the ingredients for success and so on. So I was mesmerized by this man and his business card. His presentation wasn't about his business card, but I just a business card just captured me.
Yeah.
And it didn't capture everybody, so I took a few extra home.
Yeah.
Then I get back, and I sat down and I said to the staff, we're going to try something different. I'm going to ask you I'm giving a real short version of this. I'm going to ask you to look at your fellow employees, staff here, and I want you to observe them doing things that helps our team succeed. And then I want you to write me a little note and tell me what that was and get it to me before the staff meeting that we have on a monthly basis.
Sure.
And at the end of the staff meeting, I'm going to read these things, and I'm going to select three of them as being can-worthy. And the person, those three people, will get to keep this can till the next staff meeting
okay.
on your desk.
Oh, I like that.
And, well,
I bet those cans were prized possessions for the people who got them.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I tried to say it once, and they said no. I thought, you know, only something's only, you can only laugh, get so much out of something. Right?
Yeah.
But no, they didn't want to stop it. But I institutionalized it.
Yeah.
I set up a system at the end of the year. No one knew this was happening. I added up I kept track of it, and all of the times people were nominated, not that they got them, but somebody observed them doing something on behalf of the team. And I added them all up, and they got a certain amount of nominations. I gave them a personal check for $100.
Oh, wow.
One was, and the second highest I gave, I don't know, it was like 75 and then 50 or something like
sure.
that. Sure. But I kept it going year after year, so we could look back and see who was the cumulative leader over time, and you know, and it just became part of the fabric of the organization. But the key thing was that I had my staff looking at each other, seeing what they were doing to make the business great.
Yes. Yeah.
And how powerful is that? I did not have to drive home the vision. They were living the vision.
Sure.
And you could drive it just by the comments that you made when you read the comments somebody made about the individual. And it was just a great way. And that didn't cost me anything.
Right.
It didn't cost me something, but not very much.
Yeah.
So those are things that mean things. And you know what? All the people that hardly ever get recognized, the clerical people and mm-hmm. so on, you begin to understand how much they do to make the business work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Revelations for all. But cost is not a factor. It is, unless you make it one, doesn't have to be that way.
Well, that's a great story. And I love how you had really everyone reinforcing everyone else and creating better relationships in the organization. Yeah.
It's really, really, really good. Probably one of the best things they ever did.
Yeah. Well, I love that example. Well, Frank, I want to thank you for not only taking the time to talk with us tonight, but for sharing your insights on how to better engage and motivate employees through relational leadership. I mentioned it before, but you know, I really loved your book, The Relational Leader, in particular for all of the real life stories that you share throughout the book that really bring the concepts to life and give the reader just a crystal clear picture of what it looks like to go forward and implement the principles that would make him or her a relational leader. So I hope folks will pick up a copy of your book. Of course, we'll have links on the website so that they can do so easily. But more importantly, I hope that our listeners and our readers will put into practice the principles of relational leadership for themselves so that they can realize all of the benefits that those practices provide. So thank you again for joining us.
It was great. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Frank McIntosh for being with us today and sharing his insights on how to better engage and motivate employees. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Frank McIntosh and The Relational Leader at www.fjmcintosh.com. Until next time, so long.